Okay. Let me tell you what is that you're holding in your hand. This page, that one, as it is written in the upper line, is from the DJD number 11, Discovered in the Judean Desert. It's one of the songs of the Sabbath liturgy, which has been found in the 11th page from Qumran. All those materials are translated into English in the DJD itself. However, I was not able to take the English photocopy of it, but just you know that the following page of it in Hebrew is in English. So, take one page. Okay, the second page, the one with the diagram, this one, which looks with the nice circle, it's better than what I drew on the board. This is the division of the solar calendar according to the months and their division. As you see, it starts from the vernal equinox, the first month here. Over here, look. The vernal equinox, that's the day, that's where the day and the night are equal. The first one is Chodesh Nisan, the second one is Iyar, and it follows until the 12th month, which is Adar. Have it ready so when we would discuss the calendar, you would be able to consult it. The next one, this one, that one, is the calendar as we would write it today when we arrange a calendar. Like, but the difference with the usual calendar, that is according to the solar calendar, starting from the first month to the seventh month. Like the next 500 months, look here. This is the first month, the second month, the third, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, and the seventh. On each one of them, the Saturdays and the holidays are marked in a noticeable way. If when you take a look later, you would see that all the Saturdays are parallel in every 3 months. Thus, the first Saturday of the first month would be in the fourth, the first Saturday of the fourth month would be in the fourth, and the first Saturday of the seventh month would be in the fourth. You follow? Okay? So my point is that I would like you to be acquainted and see visually and graphically what's the meaning of the calendar. Okay? Now, the last two pages are what we're going to consult today while we are discussing. So, but let me start by the following announcement. Next week, Thursday, is Yudayim the Tammuz, and there are no classes. Instead, there would be a class on Tuesday. So instead of Thursday, there would be a class on Tuesday, okay? So we would have like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, right? Or not? Okay. Since it's very condensed, we will try to work it out as best as we can. However, the class will take place in Belfer, this is Belfer building, and in 209. Instead of this class, which is 205, the class will take place at the same schedule time in 209. So just, you know, pencil it in your diary that next week, Tuesday, is instead of next week, Thursday. Why is it here? Okay, you know. Okay. Very well. Now, we would like to start with our topic today, which is Kohanim v'Malachim, priests and angels. Now, what is the major thing that we need to know about this? First of all ancient Jewish mysticism is about priests and angels. Wherever you would look, you would find multitude of angels and endless amounts of priests. The common denominator of the literature, which has been written in the course of the centuries before the Common Era, which is beyond what we have in the traditional order, like beyond the Bible, it is literature which includes many angels. All kinds of angels, angelology like this and angelology like that. But the thing which is important, and it's not always known, is the connection between the angels and the priests. In order to see that, take this page, the one which is okay, and we would like to look together on the way that this literature relates to priests and angels. Before we read, let me remind you one thing. The word word yachad, which is one of the major words in the Qumran literature, is the part of the title of Perech HaYachad. If we would have translated it, it would be the rule of the community. The word Perech corresponds to rule and order, like law, rule, order. In the Hebrew of the Megillot, in the Hebrew of the Scroll, they say Perech, Tavet, Reish, Kaf. In English it would be S-E-R-C-H or K-H. Sometimes it's written like that or like this, but in any house, the word is Perech. Order, rule, hope, Perech HaYachad. HaYachad is translated as community. However, this is not a precise translation, because the word Yachad should have been translated as togetherness. Togetherness of priests and angels. That's the thing that this community is singular about. They perceive themselves as a singularity of priests and angels and their followers. They have like three things. A Kohanim, the Amalachim, the Anshei Britam. Their followers, the participants of the covenant. Now, the word Yachad always refers to togetherness of priests and angels. The angels in this literature is the source of knowledge, the source of authority, the source of ritual. They are the foundation of everything. So one may say, in a generalization, wherever you find an angel, you will find a priest. If there is a tradition about angels, that tradition, one way or another, would be relating to the priest. Sometimes explicitly, sometimes implicitly. However, one can say that one of the greatest characteristics of this literature before the Common Era is the secret
of the... No, I mean, from the official side, the security giving me problems about the
secret. Oh, gosh. Come here and take a page of this. So, the Yahad, the togetherness of priests and angels, is the way that they perceive themselves. I'm just going to go to the I'm sorry?
It didn't take one
of those. Okay. We want to look on this page in the top right side. It is a quotation from the Book of Jubilees. But I'll read it in Hebrew and I'll translate it in a general way into English. Vayifen el Levi, vayachel levarcho rishona, vayomer elav, yivarchecha Adonai Elohe, akol Adonai kol haolamim, otcha uvanecha bechol haolamim, vekerev otcha vezaracha elav, mikol hakasher lesharto b'mikdasho, kemalachei hapanim vekedoshim. And he is speaking to Levi. Levi, now we are in a situation of blessing. We are here, look, on this page. The situation is a situation of blessing, and the one who is blessing is Yitzchak, instead of Yaakov. Now why instead of Yaakov? Because Levi, in the blessing of Yaakov, is not really blessed, is really reproached, if not cursed. You recall that in the Brachat Yaakov we have Shimon ve-Levi achim klei chamas mechorotehem, v'kalam al kavod nafshi, something al yachad kvodi. They are cursed, they are not blessed. In order to rectify this situation, Jubilees offers an alternative tradition where Yitzchak, the grandfather, the father of Yaakov, is blessing the grandson, Levi, and so it says, Vayifen el Levi, and the approach to Levi, Vayachel levarcho rishona, and the blessing first and foremost. Vayomer elav, yevarchecha Adonai Elohe akol Adonai kol haolamim. God, may God will bless you, God, master of all worlds, would bless you, you and your children, bechol haolamim, forever and ever, in all worlds. The word olam in biblical Hebrew is not world, it is eternity. It's a word referring to time and not to a place. The place that we call Olam nowadays, in the Bible is called Tevel. Tevel is the world, like Tevel v'chol yoshveva. The word Olam refers to eternity, Netzach. add. So when we have Yevarechotcha Uvanecha Bechol HaOlamim, it's like forever and ever in all eternity. Vekerev Otcha VeZarecha Elav Mikol Basar. May the Lord will draw you near, you and your children after you, among all the other people, Lesharto BeMikdasho, to serve in His temple, to serve in His temple, כמלאכי הפנים וכקדושים, and the angels of the countenance and as the holy one. Please come and take a page. It's all right. Okay, just take one of them. Okay? So what we are reading is the way that the priesthood is consecrating itself, the way that the priesthood is consecrating itself in relation to the angels. Naturally, in the Bible as we know it, no such priestly blessing is known, no such connection between priests and angels is acknowledged. However, in the literature known as Jubilee, as Enoch, as Shirot Olat HaShabbat, as Tava'at Levi, the Testimony of Levi, as Aramaic Levi, a whole lot of literature is typified exactly by that, by the consecration of the priest from the seed of Levi, by the angels or by God as the angels. So the parallels between priests and angels are very, very profound. As I said, none of that is attested directly in the Bible, but in the light Bible literature, like you believe and you know, it is very much stressed. In the next chapter, next paragraph, it is from the Shirot Olat HaShabbat, Ki yasad v'kdoshei ad kdoshei kdoshim, ve'yu lo lekohanei korek v'mikdash malchuto, meshartei panim v'gzir kvodo. Here we have a description of the angels, not of the priest. But please take note that the angels are described exactly in the priestly language. Ki yasad v'kdoshei ad kdoshei kdoshim, it's hard to translate, something like, He has established in the holiness of holiness, in the eternal holiness, kdoshei kdoshim, like most sacred or most holy among the holy. Ve'yu lo lekohanei korek b'mikdash malchuto, and they will be priests of the inner sanctum in the priestly, kingly sanctuary. Meshartei panim b'gvir kvodo. Servants of the countenance in the gvir of His mightiness. The third one is from Megillat HaMikdash. Velakohanim, and to the priest, Ki bahema bacharti mikol shvatecha. Them I chose among all your tribes. La'amod lefanai ve'lesharet ulevarech b'shmi. I chose them among all the tribes to stand in front of me, לשרת, to serve, ולברך, and to bless in my name, הוא וכל בניו בכל הימים. Him, the priesthood, and his sons forever and ever. Please note in those quotations, it's always Levi and his sons. We call it genealogy. The word genealogy is come from the Greek word to give birth, just birth. Genos is giving birth. But right by birth, the children of Levi by fathers, not by mothers. Note that the rest of the Jews are defined by their motherly origin. The priests are defined by their fatherly origin. It doesn't matter right now, right here, who is the mother, but it matters very much who is the father. If the father is Levi, the son is Levi. If the I'm sorry? Right. However, among all the Shvatim until today, the only one, the only Shevet which we know until today is Shevet Levi. We don't have anyone who says, I'm from the tribe of Dan, I'm from the tribe of Yehuda, I'm from the tribe of Benjamin. The only Shevet that until today is identified by the fatherly heritage is Levi the Kohen. There is no other Shevet, right? Well, this is who. Is there any other continuation to Eldad Adani? Well, now that's very nice. The Ethiopians, as we said, are the only ones who are continuing the Christian tradition straightforward. They do, indeed they do. They don't, as I said time and again, note that. They don't know Masoret Chazal. They have never encountered the sacred tradition because they left the land much before any sacred tradition has been introduced. Okay? So we have here the Christian tradition which suggests that it is the angels and the priests which are associated with each other. And the difference is that angels are those which are eternal. Priests are eternal by birth. You see, angels don't mean children. The angels are eternal. The priesthood perceives itself le'olmei olamim le'adei ad through their father, son. The consecration is not to a particular person. It's for the whole entire lineage, for the whole entire genetic line. This is very, very special, this thing. The rest of the divine blessings are not promised on an eternal line. The only tribe that has eternal historical, transhistorical line is the Christian tribe, which is associated with the angels. We are living in this case, we want to start by Yitzhak and Levi and Barcho.
But this also is also in the Bible,
no? Which one?
Yes. We have very similar.
Very similar in the Romani. Quite so. Now what's Megillat HaMikdash? Megillat HaMikdash is a combination of Sefer Dvarim and Sefer Vayikra in a new edition. The verses, most of the verses are from the Romani and Leviticus. However, the edition or the editorial work is different and it has one significant meaningful difference. Who is the speaker in Deuteronomy? Moshe. Deuteronomy is like the autobiography of Moshe. In Megillat HaMikdash, the speaker is God. God is speaking in first person. So when it says, Ki baheva baharti mikol shvatecha, this is God who is speaking, this is not Moshe who is speaking. So the editorial decision, which makes a profound difference between Megillat HaMikdash and Sefer Dvarim, is the stylistic presentation of the speaker. The verses are the same verses, only the conjugation are the Guf Rishon in first person speaking while the speaker is dead. Not Moshe, but Elohim. And the last one in Megillat HaMikdash, V'nibshu HaKohanim Bnei Levi Ki Bahem HaBacharti Lesharet Lefanai U'Levarech B'Shmi. And the Kohanim Bnei Levi will approach because they are those who are chosen to serve in front of me and to bless in my name. So note please that the service and the blessing are the exclusive divine blessing which is given to the priest and to them alone. Now this thing, as you well know, until today, only priests can perform the priestly blessing. This has been going on for thousands of years. Nobody else ever approached forward and said, I can also offer a priestly blessing, although I'm not a priest. The priestly blessing is something which, according to that tradition, is a divine gift given to the priest and to their children forever and ever and ever. Now, of course, quite a lot of that is in the Pentateuch as well. But the stylistic way, which is addressed in the Megillat HaMikdash, in the Temple Score, is accentuating the priesthood. Megillat HaMikdash is taking all the traditions from Vayikra, from the Deuteronomy, which have to do with priests, with temple, with service, with appointed time, with all the things that the priests are doing. Now when we ask, what is the major difference between the priestly tradition before the Common Era and the tradition of the Bible that we have after the Common Era, what is the major difference between them? There is only three things which are strikingly different. One is the fact all the things that have to do with the calendar. One is the things which have to do with angels. Angels are deleted to a great deal from the biblical tradition or added in the Christian tradition. Again, I don't make decisions. It's either or, whether it's deleted or omitted. However, it's definitely a remarkable difference. Where we would find angels in the Christian tradition, we would not find them in the biblical tradition, and vice versa. So, angels is number one. Calendar is number two. And the point of time and Levi. So we have a very interesting, complicated situation. We have a very delicate and complicated situation because Levi is certainly part of the biblical tradition. There are angels in the biblical tradition as well. The calendar is certainly part of the biblical tradition. And the appointed time of the Lord are certainly part of the biblical tradition. However, in the Qumran tradition, in the tradition of the Kohanim Levi Tzadok, all of those things are different. So we are not talking on entirely divorced tradition. We are talking on something like a braid. Like a braid that you braid one hair. Though the braids are funded from very similar traditions with slight variation. So I want you to keep that in mind because this is the situation that we are going to find out in the chariot tradition after the common era just as well. And we find it in the chariot angelic tradition before the common era. So we are speaking on similar things only from different angles. Yes.
How is the point of time different than the calendar? The thought that the biblical calendar presents many in time, which is the Quran calendar, and
yes.
You said that the difference in the Bible.
However, the Bible as we have it today, let's take an example to clarify it. In the Bible as we have it today, there is no day to Chag Shavuot. In the Bible as we have it in Quran, Chag Shavuot is in the 15th of the third month. In the Bible as we have it today, there is no such a thing as a date for the day of the Omer. In the Qumran tradition, in Megillat HaMikdash, in the temple form and all those, the date of the Omer is always the 26th of the first month. This is Mimochorat HaShabbat Shacharei HaPesach. Again, I don't want to offer any judgment what is right or what is wrong. I just want to say that there are two traditions working on the very same tradition, like they both hold the course for the Omer. But according to the biblical tradition, in the Masorah Nota, the Omer has no date. The Shavuot has no date. In the Torah calendar, as you can see in the pages that I gave you, each one of the holidays has a date. Take a look now on this page, the one which is more, the one which looks like a tabula. Okay. We are looking on calendar of 7 months. I'm sorry, just one moment before we look in the calendar. I want to explain something of importance. Why this calendar is only of 7 months? It was not that I was too lazy to make a 12-month calendar. Why it's only a 7-month calendar? Exactly. There are no holidays according to the biblical tradition anywhere other than between the first to the seventh month or between Nisan to Tishrei. There are no holidays in the Qumran tradition and in Vayikra, in Leviticus, other than between the first month to the seventh month. So all the appointed time of the Lord according to Vayikra, Leviticus, according to Qumran tradition, are all taking place in the first 7 months of the year. Now, take a look right here. The whole priestly calendar, as well as the usual Jewish calendar, is based on the number 7. First of all, every 7 days we have Shabbat, okay? Every 7 days there is a Shabbat. every 7 weeks in the first 7 months of the year, we have a holiday. Every 7 weeks in the first 7 months of the year, we have a holiday. We're going to look at it in a second to show you which are those 7 weeks. Every 7 months, we have the appointment time of the Lord. In every year, the first 7 months are the seven appointed times. There are seven holidays, okay? There are seven holidays or appointed times of the Lord in the first 7 months of every year. Further, every 7 years is a Shemitah, the following year, Shemitah. And every seventh of year it is Yovel, Jubilee, right? So every 7 years, Yovel. As you see, all those are sevenfold. I repeat, every 7 days there is Shabbat. In every 7 weeks of the first 7 months of the year, there is a holiday. We will see in a second which are those holidays. In the first 7 months of the year are all the appointed time of the Lord, which are seven. Every seventh year there is a Shemitah, and every seventh of year there is a Yovel. What is the common denominator to all those sheva? As I said before, the word sheva and the word shvuah are synonyms and common. Sheva, seven, or week. Shvuah, oath, covenant. The oath and the covenant, according to the priestly tradition, is keeping those sevenfold division of the divine order. Now I want you to take a good look and think a moment. What is the common denominator to all those things that I wrote on the board? What's the common denominator to all those things? Other than the obvious fact that there are all seven points. No. Okay. But what's the common denominator of all of them? What do we do in each one of them?
Korbanot.
Huh? Korbanot. Well, Korbanot is one way of saying it, yes. Well, yes, it's all about time, but what kind of time? It's definitely sacred time, you're quite right, but what is the nature of this sacred time? It's all a time that we heard. We haven't seen nobody saw a Saturday. You cannot see a Saturday. You can hear a Saturday. You cannot see a Jubilee. You can hear a Jubilee. What does it mean? What is the other kind of time that you can see very well? Day and night. Four seasons of the year. The changes of the moon, the changes of the sun. We can see very well the twofold division or the fourfold division or the twelvefold division of the year. We cannot see the sevenfold. I'll repeat it one more time. Time is divided to visual and to audible. What, the one that you can see and the one that you can hear. All of the sevenfold, with no exception, is based on divine commandment that has been heard by, according to the different traditions, by Enoch, by the angels, by God, by Moses, by the Levites, by the priests. Somebody has heard it and wrote it down. Nobody saw a Saturday. You see, Saturday, if you look outside of the window, Saturday would look like any other day. It is a mathematical constant. Now, you know, of course, we stop everything. Okay, however, there is no visual difference about Saturday than any other day. All of this, and you may protest as much as you wish, but that's a... I'm sorry? No, not necessarily so. The whole division did not come to be according to Sheva Kochavei Lechem. The whole division starts in the first chapters of Genesis when we are told that the world was created in 7 days. We were told, we haven't been there, we didn't see it, we could not attest by our eyes. we were told. Now that's the reason of Shema Israel. Nowhere there we were told Re'e Israel. We were told Shema Israel. The whole entire Jewish tradition. That's a very beautiful thing. That's Abraham. But that's not We divide the time according to the basic, seven days of creation. The 7 days of creation is the Jewish unit of time. Nobody else in antiquity has this particular unit. Now look, other people had holidays, had their own division of weeks, of 6 days, of 10 days. However, every different tribe or nation or empire had their own tradition of time. People need some kind of division of time. All the different divisions of time were based on whatever priestly traditions of the relevant nations, the priest of Egypt, the priest of Babylon, the priest of Rome, the priest of Greece. Always the priests and the temples are those who dictate times, or the royalty in cooperation with the priests. However, the only calendar which is based on the 7 days of creation is the Jewish calendar, but it has a difference. It has something else that nobody else has. The idea that every seven you have to resign entirely on human sovereignty. Every one of those seven is, as you said correctly, is a day when we point out by sacrifices, but those sacrifices are pointing out the fact that there is no human sovereignty, or there is no human action, or there is no human transaction in those days. You are not allowed to work in the Jubilee, in the Shemitah, in the Shabbat, in the seven appointed time of the Lord. What are all of those? Mikra Kodesh, Kol Melechet Avodah Lo Ta'asu. One is not allowed to embetter one's physical position, one monetary position, one economical position. One is not allowed to work in every one of those seconds. So this is not only no days of work, but those are also days of equality. Because in antiquity, most people were slaves. And you all recall the Shabbat laws, where we are told that it's not about the fact that we will not work. It's about that ata ve'avdecha ve'amatcha ve'gercha ve'kol asher v'sharecha. The whole entire community is not working every time, which is Mikra Kodesh. Mikra Kodesh is when we offer sacrifices, the priests, and when the rest of the community does not work. Now those seven folds are the days that the Jews do not work while everybody else does. Only the Jews' holidays are days which are no work is allowed in any time. Other people's holiday, it's a matter of you do what you want. You want to work, you can work. Nobody is enforcing a holiday. Our holidays are enforced. Now I want to draw attention to the following fact. In the whole entire body of the biblical law, as well as the following laws after it, there is no punishment for anybody who doesn't wish to work. There are very strict punishments for those who are mechalel Shabbat al yedei avodah. There are very strict punishments for those who are not Shabbat keepers, or those who are doing work in the holidays which are mikra kodesh. All those holidays, the seven appointed days of the Lord, which amount for 18 days, the seven holidays amount for 18 days. The Sheva of Pesach, the Sheva of Sukkot, Yom Kippur, Shavuot, it comes out to 18. The 18 days plus 52 Saturdays comes together to 70 days. That's apparently the hint in the Pasuk, Sod Adonai Le'ereah. The word Sod is 70. Sod like Samach is 60, 60, Vav is 6, and Dalet is 4. Together the gematric thing is 70. Sod Adonai Le'ereah, apparently according to the ancient tradition. refers to the 70 days every year that one may not work. Those are days of freedom. Those are days of equality. In a society of our, think on antiquity, please don't think on work as sitting in an office with a computer. That's not work. That's joy or fun. Work is when you sit in the mud. Work is when you sit in the mud in the field and you are building bricks. It's when you're picking cotton, when you're picking strawberries, when you work 365 days every year for other people. That was the situation. Take the book by Sir Moses Finley, but it was Moses Finkelstein is the original name, but Moses Finley, about slavery in antiquity. Slavery in antiquity was the most common social phenomenon. Most people, 3,000 years ago and 2,500 years ago, were enslaved to work of 365 days. The idea of Shabbat was utterly unknown. Nobody had right not to work. The Jewish people who inaugurated those ideas made a complete change. It is a social change, of course, based on religious change, based on divine word, but the outcome of it is a profound social change. The idea of freedom, which is coined in this literature in the beautiful phrase, Mo'adei Dror. Mo'adei Dror. Dror is freedom, like Dror is Hava, Dror is Reuva'aret. Dror is freedom. Mo'adei Dror, the appointed time of freedom and liberty. This whole system of the sevenfold is the oath of freedom, the oath of divine command, which commands people to be free 70 days every year. I repeat one more time. There is no punishment in the whole entire body of biblical literature for anyone who does not work. There is severe punishment for those who do not keep the 70 days of freedom. It's entirely vice versa in the laws of the whole entire nation. We have the Chukei Hammurabi and Chukei Hashmona. We have multiple examples of the laws of antiquity. Greek and Roman, Hammurabi and Assyria. We have plenty of legal documents. There are severe punishments for slaves who are not working, for running slaves. In the whole entire biblical literature, there is no punishment for slaves who don't work or for runaway slaves. The only punishment for slaves is for those who don't wish to get free. It's very interesting to realize that the major thing about the biblical perception of freedom is that that is what consecrated. It's freedom and shivyon, equality, because when you do not work, you are not enslaving others as well. Because pay attention, the biblical law of Saturday is stressed very, very carefully. It's not about that you yourself will not work. It's about that you and your slave and your daughter, not to be your wife is not mentioned there, but it says, Ata uvincha uvitcha ve'abdecha v'chol asher v'sharecha. Now, however, of course, anyhow, without my feminist notion, you would notice that the law of Saturday, which is really one of the most beautiful and genius laws in the whole entire legal corpus of the whole entire human being, is about the fact of complete equalization. In a society when you don't work and your slave don't work and your neighbor don't work and you are not allowed to rent anybody to do your work, you're supposed to have 70 days of freedom for the whole entire community, and I censure it, the non-Jewish community as well. You're not allowed to take Eved or Ger or Amma or somebody within your community to do your work. You're supposed to resign your sovereignty as an employer, as a worker, as a person who makes money. You're supposed to keep it as a completely free day. Now you may want to know why this is so important. And let me tell you in a general way that the laws of the Shabbat in the Quran literature are far stricter than our Shabbat laws. Far stricter. They are much more demanding. And if anybody wishes to take as a subject for the paper of this class, the Shabbat laws in Qumran in comparison to the Shabbat laws in the sages, you are welcome to do that. Because you would see in a very clear way that Chukei Shabbat in the Qumran literature and the priestly literature are far, far more strict. Why? Because they believe that that's the day that the angels are in their presence. And in order to allow the angelic presence, humans should refrain from any human concern. They should engage only in angelic concerns. And angelic concern number one is learning. The angels are called, in a beautiful word, Yadaim. Yadaim, those who are the knowledge. The only thing that we are allowed to do in Shabbat is Mikra Kodesh. Mikra Kodesh is reading the Holy Scriptures. If you are not able to read yourself, you should listen to the Holy Scriptures. You should be exposed to the Holy Word by reading or by listening. No one is exempted from it. That's the reason that nobody is working. So everyone would have the freedom to learn and to listen and to engage in a convocation of freedom. Yes.
International Rabbinic culture, when we sing Shalom Aleichem
yes.
Friday night, that always sounds almost strange, almost politics, if one reads closer, because we're addressing the angels directly, not God. To what extent would that be an echo of this tradition?
Well, the angels are not part of the sages tradition. The angels are part of the priestly tradition which follows where to the synagogue. The priestly tradition went to the synagogue where there are priests, where there is priestly blessing, where there is a communion of angel and priest in the Amidah and various other things. But let me be very clear about it. It started as a priestly focus. Later on, it amalgamated the sages and the priests together. Because after the temple was destroyed, there was great many changes in society. There were two different focus. One is called Beth Midrash and one is called Beth Knesset. Beth Knesset and only Beth Knesset is called Mikdash Me'at, where the priestly temple traditions are kept. Not all of them, some of them, not in the highest degree of purity, in a lesser degree of purity, but the priestly traditions are kept in the synagogue where angels are present, where priests are blessing, where priests are first called to Kriyat HaTorah. Later on, in the course of the first millennium, priestly traditions and sages traditions would amalgamate. And it would, and synagogue would be priestly sages institution. But it starts as a priestly institution. That's the reason that in the synagogue floor we would find the zodiac. The zodiac is the solar calendar of the visible kind. I started by saying that there are two kinds of signs. We'll do it like that. The visible and the audible. The audible, okay? The visible and the audible. The visible kind. That's the eye, that's what we can see with our eyes, that's what we can hear with our ears. Everything we sense is what we have been told or what we have heard or what we read after it has been written down by oral tradition or by prophetic tradition. That's the other time, is a fourfold or a twofold last 12 months. Everything here is something, or rather than 12 months, 12 signs, like of the zodiac. Everything here is what we can see. Here is what we have been told. What would be the time sign of the seven? You all know it. You only don't realize that that's what it is. What is the time sign of the seven? The menorah. The menorah in the temple of the seventh candle is the commemoration of the 7 days of the week, of the seven appointed time of the holidays, of the 7 weeks, of the seven months and 7 years and seven of years. Hanukkah is 8. Hanukkah is the worst holiday to be mentioned in this context, because it is not yet. No, Hanukkah is a different story. Hanukkah is by the Kohanim Lebet Hashmonai, which are trying to do something different. Hanukkah is built on Sukkot, in fact. It's built on the 8 days of Sukkot. But let's leave now Hanukkah. We want to be talking on the seven appointed times of the
Lord. And
see,
for example, the zodiac, because
the seven things
that
need to be
in either one.
Well, the zodiac is at 12. The zodiac is the 12 signs of the solar system.
And it's visible.
Yes, for them it's visible as long as it's part of their account. If they say it's visible, it's all right. If others would say it's visible, it's avodat kohavim v'mazalot. Whatever is within their distinction is all right. Whatever is outside would be avodat kohavim v'mazalot. So the priestly distinction is of visible time and audible time. The Saturday and any other seven division time is based on Shema, is based on Shmi'a, on hearing. And it is based on resigning human sovereignty. Now vice versa, here those are referring to the human sovereignty. Those are the divisions where we work, where we see in our eyes the differences. Thus the 12 signs of the zodiac refer to what? To the different working periods. We have the fishes is the time where fishes are coming and you can count them. The different things that are part of the zodiac circles are the different periods of work and the different periods of when the country, when the earth is yielding the crop. Now I want to go back a second for that, for those divisions.
What do two stand for? Four is four seasons.
Two, like day and night. Day and night. What you see in your eyes, you see light and darkness. You see four seasons. You see the 12 zodiac signs. Okay. Now they would say the following: the 7 days Shabbat we know. There's no need to elaborate. The 7 weeks. Please take a look on this table. Look on the seventh month, on the first month, in the 14th, that's the holiday of Pesach. For 7 days in the 15th, we have the holiday of the unleavened bread from the 15th until the 22nd. Like 7 days holiday, the Chag Pesach. The next holiday is the first crop holiday. We usually don't realize what it is, but that's what it is. Why is it the first crop? Because the land of Israel is giving crops only in the first month. Nothing is growing in the 12th month. Adam. The first month is where the first crop is growing. What's the first crop? Seorah. What is Omer? Omer, Seorim. Seorah is barley in English. The first thing that is growing in the land of Israel, I'm talking only Israel, I'm not talking on other countries' geography or climatology. In the land of Israel, the first crop which is growing is barley. It is usually ready towards the end of the first month. In the 26th of the first month, that's the month of Nisan, one should start the cutting of the barley, right? 7 weeks later, now you can follow with me. You see it's written for you, the 26th in 7 months is the Omer, the day of waving the sheaf, festival of the first barley. 7 weeks later, we are coming to Shavuot. It's easy to count the weeks because the Saturdays are counted by numerals. You can see like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 weeks later, it is the holiday of Shavuot. That's the holiday of the first week. Bikurei Tirchitim. Right? So the first one is Teorim. The second one is Chitim. Chitim is good. 7 weeks later, again, you can count the numerals, it's easy to find. We are coming to the third of the fifth month. That's the festival of the first one. That is Bikurei HaTirosh. You see, that's the third of the fifth month. 7 Saturdays later, again on Sunday, it's the festival of the first olive oil. That's the beginning of the festival of the wood offering. We have those Bikurim. So, the Bikurim are Teorim, Dagan, Tirosh, Tishah. Those are the 4 years which are far from one another in 7 weeks. Altogether, the land is giving 7 different kinds, Shiv'at HaMinim. Although Shiv'at HaMinim, the 7 different kinds which are born from the land, are coming in those first 7 months of the year. In the next 5 months, there is no yield, there is no bikurim, there is no fruit. Those are the periods which are called Zera v'Charish, or Choret v'Stav. In the winter and in the autumn, there is none. Only in the spring and in the summer. So the first 7 months are from the early spring, Nisan, until Tishrei, which is the seventh month. All Shiv'at HaMinim, all the 7 kinds, which include those 4 crops and the fruits, perot. The perot are what we are collecting in Sukkot. In Sukkot, we are bringing all the different fruits, and there is nothing else after this. For the next 5 months, there is nothing. Now, what is that we are doing with those 4 years, or with those 4 crops? We are bringing them to the temple. We must bring them to the temple. One may not eat barley, or wheat, or wine, or oil before they brought a tenth of it to the temple. Before they brought some of it to the priest. Only when the priest blessed it, they may eat the new, and they have to throw the old. Collection from year to year was not allowed. Only eating of the new crop was allowed after it has been taken to the temple, a little bit of it, and been blessed by the priest, and then the new agricultural year comes. Now, why all that is so important? Because what the priests are doing, they are integrating cosmological and agricultural cycles and liturgical and ritual cycles. That's what they are doing. I repeat. They are integrating agricultural and cosmological cycles, which are always permanent, with ritual and liturgical cycles, which are permanent. And they are doing this integration very carefully through what? How do they do it? Through the 24 priestly courses, which are nominated in a predeterministic order to keep the order, the consecutive order of the week. No day of the year is incidental. No week of the year is unprecedented. Every day of the year, every week of the year, every holiday of the year is well accounted for and very well monitored and kept. The priestly court or the priestly rooster of the priestly courses is like a huge cosmological clock monitoring the different seasons, the different crops, the different years, the different priestly orders. They know ahead of time what will come. And they would sum it in a very beautiful way. In the Chukotai Telechu, Eten Ishmachem Beitam. In Parashat of Chukotai, if you would keep my law, and that Parashat is coming after all the details of the different Akonjatans, if you would keep my appointed time, so say the Lord, I will assure you to have the crops in their time. You would never be hungry. In days where there was no national insurance, when there were no plans of helping the hungry ones, when famine was a matter of every second, third year, having a social system which balanced between the righteous way, which is based on 70 days of freedom for the whole entire community, and the agricultural blessing, which is the blessing of nature, the divine blessing, was the key of the priestly work. They were monitoring those time cycles because they knew very well that only in the first 7 months of the year there are agricultural yields, there are priestly seasons, there are sacrifices. They were counting them very carefully. That's what the temple scroll is about. That's what the rooster scroll is about. Rooster, no, rooster, I would say it's like a rooster. Thank you. Okay. So they were keeping the time very, very carefully. And who was the main keeper of the time? The angel. Who was teaching them the time keeping? The angel. Who was the one who was taken to heaven in order to learn all that what I now explain? For them, it was Enoch who was taken to heaven to learn the details of the 364-day calendar divided to four seasons, divided to those things. So Enoch is the one who is coming down and telling us all the details of the cosmological agricultural ritual season. But what I want to, out of all what I said, to understand is something of the following. We have like two courses of time. This one is the natural course of time. Every day, sunrise and sunset, and the seasons are working very beautifully. Every season has this 91 days. However, on this one cycle, which goes eternally, day after day, there is the other cycle. What does the other cycle do? Stops everything. The other cycle, that's the sevenfold cycle, is about stopping. You work 6 days and you stop everything. And you stop in the difference of the seven appointed times of the earth. So we have like two different time cycles working together. In order to monitor them, to synchronize them, to keep them, you need the priest. You need somebody who is in charge of the time calculation, who tells you what is when and what is where. What's the authority of those timekeepers? It's the angelic authority. For them, the angels are the source of all knowledge. Now here is the next point. It's the angels who are utterly invisible, who taught this invisible period. Anybody who wants to calculate time on account of visible system is approving the whole rationale of the priestly thing, which is on abstract, calculated, predeterministic mathematical system, and not on account of any visible thing. For them, the visible time is only a small portion of what is the time perception. Because for them, time is holy. Time is not a human decision. Time is absolutely divine dominion, divine sovereignty. Humans are only followers of the pre-calculated scheme of time, the pre-deterministic scheme of time. The priests are the keepers of those times. Okay, now let us look in the page.
So,
yes.
Did they ever have a system for correcting for a discrepancy between 360?
They do, yes, they do. In the seventh year of the Shemitah, they added the week for the discrepancy of 1 day between the 364 days of the priestly year to the 365 solar year. Every seventh year in the Shemitah, they would add a week after Sukkot, after Ma'amad Akel, so they would correct the discrepancy. They would declare when the next year starts. They would be the only one who would know where to start the next year, so it would be exactly on the solar equinox.
It was also conveniently at the end of the holiday cycle.
I'm sorry?
It's also conveniently at the end of the holiday cycle.
Of course, because then nobody comes to the temple anymore for the next 5 months and the next 7 months of the coming year. In the morning, in the sun.
Uh-huh.
Yes, sunrise. In the temple. In the temple, the day starts in the sun. All what I'm speaking about is the priestly calendar, priestly time, centered around the temple worship. How? No, but I said it, but I want to make it clear one more time. People who are not priests, who are doing all kinds of time division. Let's say that we need to plow together a field, or let's say that we need to share the crop. We don't need to do it according to the priestly calendar. The priestly calendar is about sacrifices, it's about liturgy, it's about seasons, it's about blessing. But you don't need to do it every day of the year if you're not a priest. The rest of the people, the other 11-5, let's say, are not priests. They have their own day-to-day arrangement. That does not preclude any other system of calculation. But none of those systems of calculation is sacred or consecrated. Now, as you all know, you are living in a country which has a civil calendar. You still keep the Jewish calendar. So it's very easy to keep two calendars and sometimes even three calendars together as long as only one is sacred. We can function on the normal calendar if it's not sacred for us. We can keep a sacred calendar and a civil calendar. Jews have been doing that for years and years. As long as the civil calendar is not precluding or excluding the sacred calendar. That was the case in the Antiochian days that we talked about. But now we want to look in the way that the priests and the angels are legitimizing each other. Remember, the angels are invisible. In order to legitimize or to invalidate the invisible, you need audible tradition. You need prophetic tradition. You need cultural tradition. Otherwise, how would you transmit it? They transmit it by books. Their hero is Enoch the scribe. What he has is holy scripture. Okay, now, we want to look at these priests and angels. How do they tell us the story of creation? In the beginning of Jubilees, now I'm here, I'm reading here in this right side part. Vayomer malach hapanim el Moshe bedvar Adonai le'emor. And the angel of the countenance told to Moses according to the day, to the words of God to say, K'tov kol divrei habri'ah ka'asher omar lecha. The angel of the countenance is speaking to Moses and in the name of the Lord and tell him, write all the account of creation as I'm telling you. ביום השישי קילה אדוני אלוהים את כל מעשה וכל אשר ברא וישבות ביום השביעי ויקדש אותו לכל העולמים ויתן אותו לאות לכל מעשה. On the sixth day God Almighty accomplished all his deeds and all what he created וישבות ביום השביעי and he stopped in the seventh day ויקדש אותו and consecrated it for all times ויתן אותו לאות לכל מעשיו. Please note the word אות. אות is a sign. אות is a brief, is a covenant. אות is a sign and a covenant. Enoch will be called an אות, the Shabbat will be called an אות, and the Shemesh, the sun, will be called an אות. כי ביום הראשון ברא את השמיים העליונים ואת הארץ ואת המים ואת כל הרוחות המשרתים לפניו, מלאכי הפנים ומלאכי הקודש. That's a good example how this semi-biblical tradition is working. Like in our tradition, כי ביום הראשון ברא את השמיים העליונים ואת הארץ ואת המים. Here is the addition that we don't have. ואת כל הרוחות המשרתים לפניו. And all the serving spirits who are serving in front of him, מלאכי הפנים ומלאכי הקודש, the angels of the countenance and the angels of the sacredness, ומלאכי רוחות האש ומלאכי הרוחות הנושבים ומלאכי רוחות העננים. And he further created the angels of the spirits, of the angels of the fiery spirits, the angels of the blowing winds, the angels of the cloudy winds, לערפל, לגביש, לכפור, לטל, לשלג, לברד ולקרח, all kinds of cosmological phenomena like cloud and hail and dew and snow and other things. And further, מלאכי הקולות ומלאכי הרוחות, ומלאכי הרוחות לקור ולחום ולחורף ולקיץ ולכל רוחות בריאותיו אשר עשה בשמיים ואשר עשה בארץ, ובכל התאומות מאפלה ושחר ואור וערב אשר הכין בדעתו. I would not translate every word. It is just the angels who are in charge of all the phenomena of nature. Now here is the further addition. אז ראינו, now the angels are speaking. The speaker altogether is that we see in the first line, ויומר מלאך הפנים אל משה. And the angel of the countenance is speaking to Moses. So now he is concluding the first section. אז ראינו מעשיו ונברכהו על כל מעשיו ונהללה לפניו כי שבעה מעשים גדולים עשה ביום הראשון. Not surprisingly, God did seven great deeds in the first day. אז ראינו מעשיו ונברכהו, then we the angels saw the great divine deeds and we blessed him על כל מעשיו, and we blessed him for all the great deeds that he did, ונהללה לפניו כי שבעה מעשים גדולים עשה ביום הראשון. And we praise him because he did seven great things in the first day. ויתן לנו אות גדול את יום השבת אשר שבתו. And he gave us a great sign, the Saturday, that he stopped it. ונשבות ביום השביעי מכל מלאכה. And we the angels are stopping every work in the seventh day because כי אנחנו כל מלאכי הפנים וכל מלאכי הקודש, שני המינים האלה, אמר לנו לשבות שבת עמו בשמיים ובארץ. And we, the angels of the countenance and the holy angels, those two kinds, were told לשבות שבת עמו בשמיים ובארץ. The angels are those who are observing the Saturday in heaven and in earth. Thus, anybody who is שומר שבת is imitating the angels. It's not only following the divine word, which is obvious, but is also imitating the angels. The angels are those who are the guardians of the Shabbat from the very first day of creation. Please note, 49 jubilees earlier than the Sinai code, which is the usual time of the beginning of Shamoret Yom HaShabbat Lekodesh. 49 jubilees earlier, the very beginning of creation is about creating the angels who are the keepers of the Saturday. Now this is taken, as you can see in the footnotes of the page, in the margins of the page, this is 4Q216, the fourth K from Qumran, fragment 216, column 5, lines 1 to 2, or column 7, lines 5 to 9. All of that could be found with the precise wording and fragment photocopies in the Discoveries of Judean Desert, volume 13, page 13 and page 9. Anyhow, we realize now that the angels are the guardians of Saturday and the angels are those who were first created. Who are the guardians of Saturday in the Bible? Who is in charge on telling us when is a Saturday? Who is declaring the Saturday? Who? No, there is no Beit Din in the Bible. In the Bible, who is creating? The Kohanim are telling us when Saturday is happening. כי שפתי כהן ישמרו דעת ומלאך אדוני צבאות. The Kohanim are in charge in the biblical tradition to keep the law, to keep the appointed time of the Lord, to do the sacrifices. Because what is the sacrifice about? It's to count in the day. You remember the first quotation that we read in the first class, that's the Psalms of David, when we are told that the different kinds of the Olat HaShabbat and Olat HaTamid and Olat HaMusaf, those are the different sacrificial ways to count the time. It's the priests who are counting the time. Only here we are told that it's the angels who are the pattern of counting time from the very beginning of creation. I want you to take a look on the priestly blessing which is offered in the Qumran recession. Look here on this part, on the left side, the second section from the margin. וברוכים כל מלאכי קודשו, יברך אתכם אל עליון ויאר פניו אליכם, כי אל עמכם ומלאכי קודשו מתייצבים בעדתכם, ושם קודשו נקרא עליכם. ואנחנו ביחד נועדנו, ועם ידעים נשירה לך ונרננה, עם גיבוריך באפלי נספר היחד בדעת אל. ואנו עמך במעשה המתך נהללה שמך, ובגבורתך נרוממה תפארתך בכל עתים, ומועדי תעודות עולמים, עם מבוא יומה ולילה, ומוצאי ערב ובוקר, כי גדולה מחשבת כבודך ורזי פלאותיך במהומך. Now the Hebrew is not easy, but it's not too hard to follow. But before I would translate, I would like to read one more column, this one, the one on the top of the left side of the page. I'm reading from the Hodayot, which is the praising which was found in Qumran. להתייצב במעמד עם צבא קדושים ולבוא ביחד עם עדת בני שמיים, וטפל לאיש גורל עולם עם רוחות דעת, להלל שמך ביחד ברינה, ולספר מפלאותיך, לנגד כל מעשיך, להתקדש לך מכל תועבות נידה ואשמת מעל, להייחד עם בני עמיתך ובגורל עם קדושיך, ולהתייצב במעמד לפניך עם צבא עד ורוחות דעת, להתחדש עם כל נהייה ועם ידעים ביחד רינה, כי הביאות עמיתך וכבודיך לכל אנשי עצתך, ובגורל יחד עם מלאכי פנים, ואין מליץ ביניכם לקדושיך, והם ישובו בפי כבודך, ויהיו שריך בגורל קדושיך. שורשם פרח כציץ שדה עד עולם, לגדל נצר לענפי מטעת עולם, ויצל צל על כל תבל, וענפיו עד שחקים ושורשיו עד תהום, וכל נערות עדן ישקו את דליותיו, והיה לימים אין חקר, ויערו על תבל לאין עקב, ועד שאול שורשיה. ותהיה מעיין אור למקור עולם, לאין הסר בשביבי נומו יבער. The Hebrew is very beautiful. Every word or every syntactic structure might be hard, but all the words are fair enough. Now what is it all about? What is the first part of Eretz? וברוכים כל מלאכי קודשו, יברך אתכם אל עליון ויאר פניו אליכם. What is it parallel to? Birkat Kohanim. How do we say in Birkat Kohanim? Now, in Birkat Kohanim, we mention the name of God a couple of times. In Birkat Kohanim in Qumran, we never mention the name of God. It's interesting. There are a number of recensions of the priestly blessing in Qumran. In neither or none of them, the name of God is mentioned. It is said in a different way without mentioning God's name. Apparently, they were much more careful about mentioning the divine name than later on we become to be familiar with. So they start and say, וברוכים כל מלאכי קודשו, יברך אתכם אל עליון ויאר פניו אליכם. So the blessed ones are מלאכי קודשו. It's not אתם, it's not the members of the community, it's the מלאכי קודשו, the holy angels. יברך אתכם אל עליון, God Almighty would bless you. ויאר פניו אליכם. Who are the subject of the blessing? The מלאכים. The angels are those that God is, I'm here in this part, in those lines in the left, in the lower left corner. וברוכים כל מלאכי קודשו, יברך אתכם אל עליון ויאר פנה ולכן, which is very much like ברכת כהנים, ויאר פניך, כי אל עמכם ומלאכי קודשו מתייצבים בעדכם. Now we are talking to the community. God is with you and the angels are מתייצבים בעדכם, are present in your community, are standing in your community. ושם קודשו נקרא עליכם, and God's name is upon you. ואנחנו ביחד, notice the word ביחד, as I explained, יחד is togetherness of priests and angels. ואנחנו ביחד נועדנו, we join together, ועם ידעים נשיר עליך ונרננה. Together with the angels who are called ידעים, we would sing and pray together. עם גיבוריך בהפלא נספרה יחד בדעתך. With your holy ones, with your heroic ones, the mysterious heroic ones, we will tell together בדעתך. What we call מקרא קודש is what they say, עם גיבוריך בהפלא נספרה יחד בדעתך. What we are doing the Shabbat, what we are doing in Saturday according to this tradition, we are conjoining with the angels, we are telling the praises of God, the beauty of God, the glory of God, and so on and so forth. Ve'anachnu imcha v'ma'aseh amitcha nehalela simcha. And we are together with you, in the true deeds of you, we'll praise your name. U'v'gvuratcha ne'romema tik'artecha. And in your mightiness we would praise and hail your glory. Bechol itim u'mo'adei te'udot olamim. Please note how many words for time there are in Kumar. Et is of course time. Et is time. Bechol itim u'mo'adei te'udot olamim. Every word in this verse is about time. Itim is the preordained time. Mo'adei is the appointed time of the Lord. Te'udot is every natural phenomena which is like a testimony on the divine law. Teudot olamim is forever and ever. Ki mevo yomam v'layla u'motza'ei erev v'boker. We are praising you when day is coming, when day is rising, and when night is coming. U'motza'ei erev v'boker. When the night is coming, when the day is coming, we are praising you. כי גדולה מחשבת כבודך ורזי תלעותיך במרומך. Now that is the word of the angels which is uttered also by the priest. The priest and the angels together are blessing and are minding and monitoring the task. And the last portion, the one in the middle, which is hard, I'll read it in Hebrew and then try to translate it. במזוקקי שבעתיים ובקדושים יקדיש אלוהים לו למקדש עולמים וטהרה בנבראים והיו כהנים עם צבקו צבאו ומשרתים מלאכי כבודו יהללו בהפלא נוראו למשכיל שיר הללו את שם קודשו ורוממוהו כל יודעי צדק שומרי דרך אלוהים ומסילת קודשו לקדושי עמו בדעת אלוהים הנבונה. שם ישראל ב-12 מחנות קדוש חלו, גורל אלוהים עם מלאכי נאורות כבודו ושמו תשבחות. תיקן למועדי שנה וממשלת יחד להתהלך בגורל אלוהים לפי כבודו ולשרתו בגורל עם כיסאו כי אלוהים. That is taken from the DJB volume 7. We don't know exactly what it is, we just know it's a praise of the angels in priestly languages. Mezukakei shivatayim, mezukak is like tahor, is like purified and over-purified seven times. Mezukakei shivatayim, like those who are sevenfold purified, or purified seven times. Uvekdoshim yakdish. Those who are sacred ones would be those who are consecrated. Yakdish Elohim lo lemikdash Elohim. God is consecrating the Holy One for eternal sanctuary. The eternal sanctuary is in heaven. The earthly sanctuary is on earth. Whereas in the heavenly sanctuary, the Holy Ones are serving. in the earthly sanctuary, the priests are serving, while in the holy sanctuary, the angels are monitoring the time. In the earthly sanctuary, the priests are monitoring the time. While in the heavenly sanctuary, the angels are praising. In the earthly sanctuary, the priests and the Levites are praising. While in the earthly sanctuary, the priest must take the highest degree of purity. In the angelic sanctuary, in the heavenly sanctuary, the angels are called upon to keep the highest degree of purity. V'tahara b'nivraim, that is like the purity in the created one. V'hayu kohanim am tzidko, or im tzidko tzva'o, and the priests are the righteous ones, the righteous host. U'meshartim malachei kvodo, the servants are the angelic or the glorified angels. Yehalelu behafle or behapele nora'o. We know that the angels are the servants, the priests are the righteous ones. They are going to glorify him in mysterious or wondrous things. Lamaskil shir hallelu et shem kodsho, to the master a song of praise, to praise the name of sanctity or the name of glory. Veromemu kol yodei tzedek, and those who are knowing the justice should praise him. Shomrei derech Elohim, the guardians of the way of God, the Nefilat Kodesho, those are the guardians of the way of God and the path of his sacredness. Lekdoshei Amo Bedah, those who are the sacred ones of his people in knowledge, Bedat Elohim, in divine knowledge, Manevona. So we have here, we have Da'a, which is knowledge. We have Tohara, which is purity. We have Halel, which is praise. We have Kodesh, which is everything around the sacredness and the sanctity. We have Shomrei Derech Elohim, the guardians of the way of God. And we have Da'at Elohim and Avot. Those things are the responsibility of angels and priests. Both of them are Shomrei Da'a, the keepers of knowledge. Both of them are the keepers of purity. Both of them are the keepers of the Halel, the praise, the glorification, the benediction. Both of them are the keepers of the sacred presence. Now, we want to pay attention for the component of those things. We have, we said about holy time, holy place. And holy ritual. They are all associated. The unity of holy place and holy time and holy ritual is what forms a sanctuary. There is no sanctuary without holy time, without notion of holy place, and without notion of holy service. Instead of three brothers and wife service, or you can write four and one, we know now that all of them are connected. All of them are God, but the most important thing is that all of them are the image of the heavenly sanctuary. The borders between the heavenly sanctuary and the earthly sanctuary are open. Because of this, the degree of purity of the sanctuary is the highest possible, because it is the venue of the angels. Now, that's the reason, by the way, that no women are allowed anywhere near to the sanctuary, to the Holy of Holies, to the Heichal. Women are only in the margins, in the brass machine. But the same is true in the command agency, where they instituted the heavenly sanctuary, where they were the keepers of its earthly pattern. Women were not allowed there because of the very same reason. The highest degree of purity required for the presence of angels is barring women out of the temple. And I make a note of this point because while the whole idea of temple erased after the year 70 because there is no temple, the purity laws of barring women from the sanctuary were kept in the synagogue. Although the synagogue is not sanctuary because it's not supposed to have this high degree of priest, because as you know, in the synagogue not only priests are serving. In the temple, only priests are serving. In the synagogue, the whole entire community is officiating. And you don't require a high degree of purity to enter a synagogue. But the women were kept outside because of their remnant, because of the temple. While it has perfect logic within the temple, it doesn't have such logic in the synagogue. And yet, the purity laws in regard of women, not in regard of men, were kept in the synagogue in the highest strictest court. I want you to remember that. What is kept and what is marginalized. So, we want to pay attention to the policy. In the temple, we have unity of holy time, holy ritual, holy place, and holy time. What is the component of holy time? By now we know. This is the synchronization of visual time and audible time. If the holy time is the time where everything stops, who is the only one that doesn't stop? The Kohen, the priest. The Kohanim are working in such a way, they are not shobek as we all do. Because all of that, as I said, all of these things in its entirety, we call sanctuary. As you all know, the word sanctuary comes from sanctus, which is kodesh. Like the word mikdash reserves the word kodesh in. The word sanctuary has the same, sanctus, yes? Or agia in Greek. Agia Sophia, agia is kadosh, is sacred in Greek. Agia in Greek, sacred in Latin, sanctus or kodesh, mikdash, all the same. It's where things are different, okay? Where everything is sustained. It's not like everywhere else. Now try to follow carefully the next point. In the temple, everything which is prohibited outside is permitted inside and vice versa. What's permitted outside is prohibited inside. For instance, while it is strictly prohibited to lit fire in Shabbat everywhere, in the Mikdash, in the sacred presence, fire is lit for the sake of the Korbanot and the Menorah. Only in the temple, fire is lit in Shabbat. Nowhere else in anybody's vicinity, fire could be lit in Shabbat. In the temple, which is an inverse surrounding, fire is lit. No one is allowed under the strictest strictures to work on Shabbat. In the temple, they are working in Shabbat. No one is allowed to wear in the temple, the high priest is wearing the kind of clothes which are those forbidden things. Now, one can speculate why is this, or what does it represent, but we would leave that speculation right now. However, the point is that the 39 Avot Melacha, which are towards the Shabbat, were learned from the 39 things which were done in the temple, which are prohibited outside of the temple. Okay? So, sanctuary is a place where what is permitted there is utterly prohibited outside. Another example for that rule, we are not allowed to do Pesel Vechol Tmuna. We are not allowed to do any sculpture or any picture representing the divine world. Because the full sentence is לא תעשה לך פסל בכל תמונה אשר בשמיים ממה, right? You are not supposed to do any sculpture presenting anything which is in the heaven above. But what is in the midst of this holy place? The cherubim, the cherub, the merkava, which is definitely a depiction of something of those heavenly beings which are known as cherubim. The Kruvim are
day of atonement, which were mentioned yesterday as you recall. But these cherubim, these merkavah, these holy things, is also an opening to the heaven above. It's not a building in the sense of the very four walls and the field. It is open to the temple above. It is a passage to the temple above. Not for us, not for the laity, only for the high priest, to those who follow the ways of righteousness. So this place, the holy place, is a passage to the heavenly world. It's a both-way passage. The angels are coming through the Holy of Holies to the down below, and the priests are ascending to the heavenly sanctuary from above, from below to above. Again, not every day, but every Saturday, when everything is suspended, that may take place according to this tradition. Now, the precondition, the absolute precondition of the holy place is the highest degree of purity. Now, this degree of purity is preconditioned by all kinds of scriptures, and as I said, it is relating only to males. But the laws of purity on the priests and the Levites are far greater than on the rest of the community. Those who are serving here are messengers. So the word Balak in Hebrew behaves to me. One is an angel and one is a messenger. But not a messenger as deliver your package. A messenger is a messenger from above. A messenger from above bringing knowledge, bringing blessing, bringing love, bringing the divine word. So the messenger, the messengers are coming from above below. They are the angels. The priests are supposed to facilitate their coming because they will never come down if the highest scriptures of purity would not be kept. So they are in charge on the highest degrees of purity and sanctity. And there is no end to it. They may do that, and they may do this, and they may not do this, and they may not do that. In Leviticus, it's all very well detailed. And in other portions of the Pentateuch, and in the Christian writing of this literature, it is elaborated further and further. But all what they do is in order to facilitate the descent of the angels, the coming of the angels. In their consciousness, they are praising the angels, they are adjuring the angels, they are drawing them down in order to make life infused with divinity. Now, where are those angels?
I just missed the point you said that what is Mutar in
what's permitted, okay. What's permitted in the temple is utterly prohibited outside of it. Things like Petzel ve'Tmuna and Esh ve'Shabbat are permitted in the temple, but of course utterly prohibited outside. What's permitted outside of the temple is utterly prohibited inside. You cannot work in the, you cannot enter the temple impure, you cannot work in the temple. You have to suspend or suspend everything.
What is this,
it's telling us that what's in the temple is not a reflection of the world outside. It's a reflection of the heaven above. Okay, thank you for helping me to accomplish that. The temple is the reflection of the heavenly world. The people who are serving there is the people who are embodying the qualities of the heavenly world. Now, all of this was historically true in the consciousness of those who wrote it until the year 175 BC. As I said, that's when Jason started the course of the illegitimate priesthood and then deteriorated from there, exchanged by the priest of the Hashmonaim and later on by the priest of Hod and all of that. But until the year 175, those people who held for those ideas, for the unity of priests and angels, were doing it for the sake of going down the divine blessing, the divine gift. Now, but the point that I want you to remember, that the holy time was
based on testimony. Because what is the testimony that they are bringing? The very same verse that I mentioned before. In the Hukotai Celestu, attend Ishmachem Beitan. If you would follow the laws of my appointed time, the 70 days of freedom, the 52 Saturdays and 18 days of the holidays, I would, so said heaven, or so said God, or so our responsible God and the angels, if you would keep my days of freedom, I would be in charge on the fruit of the earth, on the yield of the earth, on the crop of the earth, on the sustenance and livelihood of the whole entire community. So the blessing of nature is the divine promise of the covenant, and it is affected in all the covenants that wherever there is a covenant, the covenant of the divine child is about procreation, continuation, sustenance, fruit, and so on, while on the human side it's about accepting law, or preventing from doing that and not doing this and not doing that. The different laws and writings and covenants on the human side is about moral scripture. The heavenly side is also, you remember the covenant with Noah. I assure you that forever and ever there would be no more flood, and always the four seasons of the earth, the day and the night, would come eternally. With Abraham the covenant is, your seed would be eternal. The procreation of the human race would never cease. Later on, with the Brit Moshe, the Sinai, the covenant in Sinai, the historical continuation was kept as an ongoing promise. Now, the continuation, which is life, which is sustenance, which is fruit, which is furnishing and all that, having food for livelihood and sustenance, all that is in the divine responsibility. The human responsibility is keeping the time, the appointed time of freedom, the appointed time of freedom and knowledge and equality. Remember that that's the idea of the priestly calendar, and you may want to recall that that priestly calendar was first offered after 400 years of slavery. Those who were enslaved in Egypt for 400 years, according to the historical tradition of the Bible, valued freedom and valued equality and valued appointed time more than anything. No one in antiquity had the right of having 70 days of freedom every working year. Nobody in antiquity had the opportunity of freedom, which means no work, complete equality, and opportunity to study. The Jews revered those ideas, which were introduced by the tribe of Levi family, by Moses, by Aaron, by the prophetic knowledge, by the priestly knowledge, and according to the tradition of Bnei Sadok, it was first introduced by Enoch, who was the priestly messenger coming from heaven that was first taken by God and descending, and taught them the calendar of the appointed time and the laws of the prohibitions, what one should not do. When you would read the first chapters of the Book of Jubilee, you would see the details of all of that, and the more you would read, the more you would know.